the bear-sized dog he had been. I? A spy for Voldemort? When did I ever sneak around people who were stronger and more powerful than myself? But you, Peter, I'll never understand why I didn't see you were the spy from the start. You always liked big friends who'd look after you, didn't you? It used to be us, me and Remus and James. Pettigrew wiped his face again. He was almost panting for breath.
Me? A spy? Must be out of your mind. Never. Don't know how you can say such a...
Lily and James only made you secret keeper because I suggested it, Black hissed, so venomously that Pettigrew took a step backward. I thought it was the perfect plan. A bluff. Voldemort would be sure to come after me. Would never dream they'd use a weak, talentless thing like you. It must have been the finest moment of your miserable life, telling Voldemort you could hand him the Potters.
Pettigrew was muttering distractedly. Harry caught words like,
far-fetched!
And,
lunacy!
But he couldn't help paying more attention to the ashen color of Pettigrew's face and the way his eyes continued to dart toward the windows and door.
"Professor Lupin," said Hermione timidly, can I say something?"
"Certainly, Hermione," said Lupin courteously.
"Well, Scabbers, I mean, this man, he's been sleeping in Harry's dormitory for 3 years. If he's working for you-know-who, how come he never tried to hurt Harry before now?"
"There,"
said Pettigrew shrilly, pointing at Ron with his maimed hand.
"Thank you. You see, Remus, I have never hurt a hair of Harry's head. Why should I?"
"I'll tell you why," said Black. "Because you never did anything for anyone unless you could see what was in it for you. Voldemort's been in hiding for 15 years. They say he's half dead. You weren't about to commit murder right under Albus Dumbledore's nose for a wreck of a wizard who'd lost all his power, were you? You'd want to be quite sure he was the biggest bully in the playground before you went back to him, wouldn't you? Why else did you find a wizard family to take you in? Keeping an ear out for news, weren't you, Peter? Just in case your old protector regained strength and it was safe to rejoin him."
Pettigrew opened his mouth and closed it several times. He seemed to have lost the ability to talk.
Mr. Black, Sirius, said Hermione.
Black jumped at being addressed like this, and stared at Hermione as though he had never seen anything quite like her.
"If you don't mind me asking, how did you get out of Azkaban if you didn't use dark magic?"
"Thank you,"
gasped Pettigrew, nodding frantically at her.
"Exactly, precisely what I..."
But Lupin silenced him with a look. Black was frowning slightly at Hermione, but not as though he were annoyed with her. He seemed to be pondering his answer.
"I don't know how I did it," he said slowly. "I think the only reason I never lost my mind is that I knew I was innocent. That wasn't a happy thought, so the Dementors couldn't suck it out of me. But it kept me sane, and knowing who I am helped me keep my powers, so when it all became too much, I could transform in my cell, become a dog. Dementors can't see, you know."
He swallowed.
"They feel their way toward people by feeding off their emotions. They could tell that my feelings were less human, less complex when I was a dog. But they thought, of course, that I was losing my mind like everyone else in there, so it didn't trouble them. But I was weak, very weak, and I had no hope of driving them away from me without a wand. But then I saw Peter in that picture. I realized he was at Hogwarts with Harry, perfectly positioned to act if one hint reached his ears that the dark side was gathering strength again."
Pettigrew was shaking his head, mouthing noiselessly, but staring all the while at Black as though hypnotized.
"Ready to strike at the moment he could be sure of allies, and to deliver the last Potter to them. If he gave them Harry, who'd dare say he'd betrayed Lord Voldemort? He'd be welcomed back with honors. So, you see, I had to do something. I was the only one who knew Peter was still alive."
Harry remembered what Mr. Weasley had told Mrs. Weasley. The guards say he's been talking in his sleep, always the same words. He's at Hogwarts.
It was as if someone had lit a fire in my head, and the Dementors couldn't destroy it. It wasn't a happy feeling. It was an obsession. But it gave me strength. It cleared my mind. So one night, when they opened my door to bring food, I slipped past them as a dog. It's so much harder for them to sense animal emotions that they were confused. I was thin, very thin, thin enough to slip through the bars. I swam as a dog back to the mainland. I journeyed north and slipped into the Hogwarts grounds as a dog. I've been living in the forest ever since, except when I came to watch the Quidditch, of course. You fly as well as your father did, Harry.
He looked at Harry, who did not look away.
"Believe me," croaked Black. "Believe me, Harry, I never betrayed James and Lily. I would have died before I betrayed them."
And at long last Harry believed him. Throat too tight to speak, he nodded.
"No!"
Pettigrew had fallen to his knees as though Harry's nod had been his own death sentence. He shuffled forward on his knees, grovelling, his hands clasped in front of him as though praying.
"Sirius, it's me, it's Peter, your friend. You wouldn't—"
Black kicked out, and Pettigrew recoiled.
"There's enough filth on my robes without you touching them," said Black.
"Remus!"
Pettigrew squeaked, turning to Lupin instead, writhing imploringly in front of him.
"You don't believe this? Wouldn't Sirius have told you they'd changed the plan?"
"Not if he thought I was the spy, Peter," said Lupin. "I assume that's why you didn't tell me, Sirius," he said casually over Pettigrew's head.
"Forgive me, Remus," said Black.
"Not at all, Padfoot, old friend," said Lupin, who was now rolling up his sleeves. "And will you, in turn, forgive me for believing you were the spy?"
"Of course,"
said Black, and the ghost of a grin flitted across his gaunt face. He, too, began rolling up his sleeves.
"Shall we kill him together?"
"Yes, I think so," said Lupin grimly.
"You wouldn't! You won't!"
gasped Pettigrew, and he scrambled around to Ron.
"Ron! Haven't I been a good friend? A good pet? You won't let them kill me, Ron, will you? You're on my side, aren't you?"
But Ron was staring at Pettigrew with the utmost revulsion.
"I let you sleep in my bed?" he said.
"Kind boy, kind master."
Pettigrew crawled toward Ron.
"You won't let them do it? I was your rat. I was a good pet."
"If you made a better rat than a human, it's not much to boast about, Peter," said Black harshly.
Ron, going still paler with pain, wrenched his broken leg out of Pettigrew's reach. Pettigrew turned on his knees, staggered forward, and seized the hem of Hermione's robes.
"Sweet girl, clever girl, you won't let them? Help me!"
Hermione pulled her robes out of Pettigrew's clutching hands and backed away against the wall, looking horrified. Pettigrew knelt, trembling uncontrollably, and turned his head slowly toward Harry.
"Harry, Harry, you look just like your father, just like him."
"How dare you speak to Harry?" roared Black. "How dare you face him? How dare you talk about James in front of him?"
"Harry!"
whispered Pettigrew, shuffling toward him, hands outstretched.
"Harry, James wouldn't have wanted me killed. James would have understood, Harry. He would have shown me mercy."
Both Black and Lupin strode forward, seized Pettigrew's shoulders, and threw him backward onto the floor. He sat there twitching with terror, staring up at them.
"You sold Lily and James to Voldemort," said Black, who was shaking too. "Do you deny it?"
Pettigrew burst into tears. It was horrible to watch, like an oversized balding baby cowering on the floor.
"Sirius, Sirius, what could I have done? The Dark Lord, you have no idea. He has weapons you can't imagine. I was scared, Sirius. I was never brave like you and Remus and James. I never meant it to happen. He who must not be named forced me."
"Don't lie," bellowed Black. "You'd been passing information to him for a year before Lily and James died. You were his spy."
He He was taking over everywhere,
gasped Pettigrew.
What was there to be gained by refusing him?
What was there to be gained by fighting the most evil wizard who has ever existed?
Said Black, with a terrible fury in his face.
Only innocent lives, Peter.
You don't understand,
whined Pettigrew.
He would have killed me, Sidious.
Then you should have died, roared Black. Died, rather than betray your friends, as we would have done for you.
Black and Lupin stood shoulder to shoulder, wands raised. You should have realized, said Lupin quietly. If Voldemort didn't kill you, we would. Goodbye, Peter. Hermione covered her face with her hands and turned to the wall.
No!
Harry yelled. He ran forward, placing himself in front of Pettigrew, facing the wands.
You can't kill him, he said breathlessly. You can't!
Black and Lupin both looked staggered.
Harry, this piece of vermin is the reason you have no parents.
Black snarled.
This cringing bit of filth would have seen you die too, without turning a hair. You heard him. His own stinking skin meant more to him than your whole family.
I know,
Harry panted.
We'll take him up to the castle. We'll hand him over to the Dementors. He can go to Azkaban. But don't kill him.
Harry,
gasped Pettigrew, and he flung his arms around Harry's knees.
You! Thank you! It's more than I deserve. Thank you!
Get off me! Harry spat, throwing Pettigrew's hands off him in disgust.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing it because I don't reckon my dad would have wanted them to become killers, just for you. No one moved or made a sound except Pettigrew, whose breath was coming in wheezes as he clutched his chest. Black and Lupin were looking at each other. Then, with one movement, they lowered their wands.
You're the only person who has the right to decide, Harry, said Black. But think what he did.
He can go to Azkaban, Harry repeated. If anyone deserves that place, he does. Pettigrew was still wheezing behind him.
Very well, said Lupin. Stand aside, Harry.
Harry hesitated.
I'm going to tie him up, said Lupin. That's all, I swear.
Harry stepped out of the way. Thin cord shot from Lupin's wand this time. The next moment Pettigrew was wriggling on the floor, bound and gagged.
But if you transform, Peter,
growled Black, his own wand pointing at Pettigrew too,
we will kill you. You agree, Harry?
Harry looked down at the pitiful figure on the floor and nodded so that Pettigrew could see him.
Right, said Lupin, suddenly businesslike. Ron, I can't mend bones nearly as well as Madame Pomfrey, so I think it's best if we just strap your leg up until we can get you to the hospital wing.
He hurried over to Ron, bent down, tapped Ron's leg with his wand, and muttered, Ferula. Bandages spun up Ron's leg, strapping it tightly to a splint. Lupin helped him to his feet. Ron put his weight gingerly on the leg and didn't wince.
That's better, he said. Thanks. What about Professor Snape?
Said Hermione in a small voice, looking down at Snape's prone figure.
There's nothing seriously wrong with him, said Lupin, bending over Snape and checking his pulse. You were just a little over-enthusiastic, still out cold. Perhaps it will be best if we don't revive him until we're safely back in the castle. We can take him like this.
He muttered, Mobile corpus. As though invisible strings were tied to Snape's wrists, neck and knees, he was pulled into a standing position, head still lolling unpleasantly, like a grotesque puppet. He hung a few inches above the ground, his limp feet dangling. Lupin picked up the invisibility cloak and tucked it safely into his pocket.
And two of us should be chained to this, said Black, nudging Pettigrew with his toe, just to make sure.
I'll do it, said Lupin.
And me,
said Ron, savagely limping forward. Black conjured heavy manacles from thin air. Soon Pettigrew was upright again, left arm chained to Lupin's right, right arm to Ron's left. Ron's face was set. He seemed to have taken Scabbers' true identity as a personal insult. Crookshanks leapt lightly off the bed and led the way out of the room, his bottle-brush tail held jauntily high. Chapter 20 The Dementor's Kiss. Harry had never been part of a stranger group. Crookshanks led the way down the stairs. Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron went next, looking like entrants in a six-legged race. Next came Professor Snape, drifting creepily along, his toes hitting each stair as they descended, held up by his own wand, which was being pointed at him by Sirius. Harry and Hermione brought up the rear. Getting back into the tunnel was difficult. Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron had to turn sideways to manage it. Lupin still had Pettigrew covered with his wand. Harry could see them edging awkwardly along the tunnel in single file. Crookshanks was still in the lead. Harry went right after Black, who was still making Snape drift along ahead of them. He kept bumping his lolling head on the low ceiling. Harry had the impression Black was making no effort to prevent this.
"You know what this means?"
Black said abruptly to Harry as they made their slow progress along the tunnel.
"Turning Pettigrew in?"
"You're free," said Harry.
"Yes," said Black, "but I'm also... I don't know if anyone ever told you. I'm your godfather."
"Yeah, I knew that," said Harry.
"Well, your parents appointed me your guardian," said Black stiffly. "If anything happened to them..."
Harry waited. Did Black mean what he thought he meant?
"I'll understand, of course, if you want to stay with your aunt and uncle," said Black. "But, well, think about it. Once my name's cleared, if you wanted a different home..."
Some sort of explosion took place in the pit of Harry's stomach.
"What? Live with you?"
he said, accidentally cracking his head on a bit of rock protruding from the ceiling.
"Leave the Dursleys?"
"Of course, I thought you wouldn't want to," said Black quickly. "I understand. I just thought I'd..."
"Are you insane?"
said Harry, his voice easily as croaky as Black's.
"Of course I want to leave the Dursleys. Have you got a house? When can I move in?"
Black turned right around to look at him. Snape's head was scraping the ceiling, but Black didn't seem to care.
"You want to?"
he said.
"You mean it?"
"Yeah, I mean it," said Harry.
Black's gaunt face broke into the first true smile Harry had seen upon it. The difference it made was startling, as though a person 10 years younger was shining through the starved mask. For a moment, he was recognizable as the man who had laughed at Harry's parents' wedding. They did not speak again until they had reached the end of the tunnel. Crookshanks darted up first. He had evidently pressed his paw to the knot on the trunk, because Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron clambered upward without any sign of savaging branches. Black saw Snape up through the hole, then stood back for Harry and Hermione to pass. At last, all of them were out. The grounds were very dark now. The only light came from the distant windows of the castle. Without a word, they set off. Pettigrew was still wheezing and occasionally whimpering. Harry's mind was buzzing. He was going to leave the Dursleys. He was going to live with Sirius Black, his parents' best friend. He felt dazed. What would happen when he told the Dursleys he was going to live with the convict they'd seen on television?
"One wrong move, Peter,"
said Lupin, threateningly ahead. His wand was still pointed sideways at Pettigrew's chest. Silently, they tramped through the grounds, the castle lights growing slowly larger. Snape was still drifting weirdly ahead of Black, his chin bumping on his chest, and then... A cloud shifted. There was suddenly dim shadows on the ground. Their party was bathed in moonlight. Snape collided with Lupin, Pettigrew, and Ron, who had stopped abruptly. Black froze. He flung out one arm to make Harry and Hermione stop. Harry could see Lupin's silhouette. He had gone rigid. Then his limbs began to shake.
"Oh, my," Hermione gasped. "He didn't take his potion tonight. He's not safe."
"Run,"
Black whispered.
"Run, now."
But Harry couldn't run. Ron was chained to Pettigrew and Lupin. He leapt forward, but Black caught him around the chest and threw him back.
"Leave it to me. Run."
There was a terrible snarling noise. Lupin's head was lengthening, so was his body. His shoulders were hunching. Hair was sprouting visibly on his face and hands, which were curling into clawed paws. Crookshanks' hair was on end again. He was backing away. As the werewolf reared, snapping its long jaws, Sirius disappeared from Harry's side. He had transformed. The enormous, bear-like dog bounded forward. As the werewolf wrenched itself free of the manacle binding it, the dog seized it about the neck and pulled it backward, away from Ron and Pettigrew. They were locked jaw to jaw, claws ripping at each other. Harry stood transfixed by the sight, too intent upon the battle to notice anything else. It was Hermione's scream that alerted him. Pettigrew had dived for Lupin's dropped wand. Ron, unsteady on his bandaged leg, fell. There was a bang, a burst of light, and Ron lay motionless on the ground. Another bang. Crookshanks flew into the air and back to the earth in a heap. "Expelliarmus!" Harry yelled, pointing his own wand at Pettigrew. Lupin's wand flew high into the air and out of sight. "Stay where you are!" Harry shouted, running forward. Too late. Pettigrew had transformed. Harry saw his bald tail whip through the manacle on Ron's outstretched arm and heard a scurrying through the grass. There was a howl and a rumbling growl. Harry turned to see the werewolf taking flight. It was galloping into the forest.
"Sirius, he's gone! Pettigrew transformed!" Harry yelled.
Black was bleeding. There were gashes across his muzzle and back. But at Harry's words, he scrambled up again, and in an instant the sound of his paws faded to silence as he pounded away across the grounds. Harry and Hermione dashed over to Ron.
"What did he do to him?"
Hermione whispered. Ron's eyes were only half closed. His mouth hung open. He was definitely alive. They could hear him breathing, but he didn't seem to recognize them.
"I don't know."
Harry looked desperately around. Black and Lupin both gone. They had no one but Snape for company, still hanging unconscious in midair. "We'd better get them up to the castle and tell someone," said Harry, pushing his hair out of his eyes, trying to think straight. "Come." But then, from beyond the range of their vision, they heard a yelping, a whining, a dog in pain.
"Sirius," Harry muttered, staring into the darkness.
He had a moment's indecision, but there was nothing they could do for Ron at the moment, and by the sound of it, Black was in trouble. Harry set off at a run, Hermione right behind him. The yelping seemed to be coming from the ground near the edge of the lake. They pelted toward it, and Harry, running flat out, felt the cold without realizing what it must mean. The yelping stopped abruptly. As they reached the lake shore, they saw why. Sirius had turned back into a man. He was crouched on all fours, his hands over his head.
"No!"
he moaned.
"No! Please!"
And then Harry saw them. Dementors, at least 100 of them, gliding in a black mass around the lake toward them. He spun round, the familiar icy cold penetrating his insides, fog starting to obscure his vision. More were appearing out of the darkness on every side. They were encircling them.
"Hermione, think of something happy,"
Harry yelled, raising his wand, blinking furiously to try and clear his vision, shaking his head to rid it of the faint screaming that had started inside it.
"I'm going to live with my godfather. I'm leaving the Dursleys."
He forced himself to think of Black, and only Black, and began to chant, "Expecto Patronum! Expecto Patronum!" Black gave a shudder, rolled over, and lay motionless on the ground, pale as death.
"He'll be all right. I'm going to go and live with him. Expecto Patronum! Hermione, help me! Expecto Patronum! Expecto,"
Hermione whispered.
"Expecto! Expecto!"
But she couldn't do it. The Dementors were closing in, barely 10 feet from them. They formed a solid wall around Harry and Hermione and were getting closer.
"Expecto Patronum!"
Harry yelled, trying to block the screaming from his ears.
"Expecto Patronum!"
A thin wisp of silver escaped his wand and hovered like mist before him. At the same moment, Harry felt Hermione collapse next to him. He was alone, completely alone.
"Expecto, expecto, patronum."
Harry felt his knees hit the cold grass. Fog was clouding his eyes. With a huge effort, he fought to remember.
"Sirius was innocent. Innocent. We'll be okay. I'm going to live with him. Expecto Patronum!"
he gasped. By the feeble light of his formless Patronus, he saw a Dementor halt very close to him. It couldn't walk through the cloud of silver mist Harry had conjured. A dead, slimy hand slid out from under the cloak. It made a gesture as though to sweep the Patronus aside.
"No! No!" Harry gasped. "He's innocent! Expecto! Expecto! Patronum!"
He could feel them watching him, hear their rattling breath like an evil wind around him. The nearest Dementor seemed to be considering him. Then it raised both its rotting hands and lowered its hood. Where there should have been eyes, there was only thin, grey, scabbed skin stretched blankly over empty sockets. But there was a mouth, a gaping, shapeless hole, sucking the air with the sound of a death rattle. A paralyzing terror filled Harry so that he couldn't move or speak. His Patronus flickered and died. White fog was blinding him. He had to fight.
Expecto Patronum.
He couldn't see, and in the distance he heard the familiar screaming.
Expecto Patronum.
He groped in the mist for Sirius and found his arm. They weren't going to take him. But a pair of strong, clammy hands suddenly attached themselves around Harry's neck. They were forcing his face upward. He could feel its breath. It was going to get rid of him first. He could feel its putrid breath. His mother was screaming in his ears. She was going to be the last thing he ever heard. And then, through the fog that was drowning him, he thought he saw a silvery light growing brighter and brighter. He felt himself fall forward onto the grass. Face down, too weak to move, sick and shaking, Harry opened his eyes. The Dementor must have released him. The blinding light was illuminating the grass around him. The screaming had stopped. The cold was ebbing away. Something was driving the Dementors back. It was circling around him and Black and Hermione. They were leaving. The air was warm again. With every ounce of strength he could muster, Harry raised his head a few inches and saw an animal amid the light, galloping away across the lake. Eyes blurred with sweat, Harry tried to make out what it was. It was as bright as a unicorn. Fighting to stay conscious, Harry watched it canter to a halt as it reached the opposite shore. For a moment, Harry saw, by its brightness, somebody welcoming it back, raising his hand to pat it. Someone who looked strangely familiar. But it couldn't be. Harry didn't understand. He couldn't think any more. He felt the last of his strength leave him, and his head hit the ground as he fainted. Chapter 21. Hermione's Secret.
Shocking business. Shocking. Miracle none of them died. Never heard the like. By thunder, it was lucky you were there, Snape. Thank you, Minister. Order of Merlin. Second class, I'd say. First class, if I can wangle it. Thank you very much indeed, Minister. Nasty cut you've got there. Black's work, I suppose. As a matter of fact, it was Potter, Weasley and Granger, Minister. No. Black had bewitched them. I saw it immediately. A confundus charm, to judge by their behavior. They seemed to think there was a possibility he was innocent. They weren't responsible for their actions. On the other hand, their interference might have permitted Black to escape. They obviously thought they were going to catch Black single-handed. They've got away with a great deal before now. I'm afraid it's given them a rather high opinion of themselves. And of course Potter has always been allowed an extraordinary amount of license by the headmaster.
Ah, well, Snape. Harry Potter, you know. We've all got a bit of a blind spot where he's concerned.
And yet, is it good for him to be given so much special treatment? Personally, I try and treat him like any other student, and any other student would be suspended, at the very least, for leading his friends into such danger. Consider, Minister, against all school rules, after all the precautions put in place for his protection, out of bounds at night, consorting with a werewolf and a murderer. And I have reason to believe he has been visiting Hogsmeade illegally, too.
Well, we shall see, Snape, we shall see. The boy has undoubtedly been foolish.
Harry lay listening with his eyes tight shut. He felt very groggy. The words he was hearing seemed to be travelling very slowly from his ears to his brain, so that it was difficult to understand. His limbs felt like lead, his eyelids too heavy to lift. He wanted to lie here on this comfortable bed forever.
"What amazes me most is the behavior of the Dementors. You've really no idea what made them retreat, Snape?"
"No, Minister. By the time I had come round, they were heading back to their positions at the entrances."
"Extraordinary. And yet, Black and Harry and the girl?"
"All unconscious by the time I reached them. I bound and gagged Black, naturally, conjured stretchers, and brought them all straight back to the castle."
There was a pause. Harry's brain seemed to be moving a little faster, and as it did, a gnawing sensation grew in the pit of his stomach. He opened his eyes. Everything was slightly blurred. Somebody had removed his glasses. He was lying in the dark hospital wing. At the very end of the ward, he could make out Madame Pomfrey with her back to him, bending over a bed. Harry squinted. Ron's red hair was visible beneath Madame Pomfrey's arm. Harry moved his head over on the pillow. In the bed to his right lay Hermione. Moonlight was falling across her bed. Her eyes were open, too. She looked petrified, and when she saw that Harry was awake, pressed a finger to her lips, then pointed to the hospital wing door. It was ajar, and the voices of Cornelius Fudge and Snape were coming through it from the corridor outside. Madame Pomfrey now came walking briskly up the dark ward to Harry's bed. He turned to look at her. She was carrying the largest block of chocolate he had ever seen in his life. It looked like a small boulder.
"Ah, you're awake,"
she said briskly. She placed the chocolate on Harry's bedside table and began breaking it apart with a small hammer.
"How's Ron?" said Harry and Hermione together.
"He'll live," said Madame Pomfrey grimly. "As for you two, you'll be staying here until I'm satisfied you're... Potter, what do you think you're doing?"
Harry was sitting up, putting his glasses back on and picking up his wand.
"I need to see the headmaster," he said.
"Potter," said Madame Pomfrey soothingly, "it's all right. They've got Black. He's locked away upstairs. The Dementors will be performing the kiss any moment now."
"What?"
Harry jumped up out of bed. Hermione had done the same, but his shout had been heard in the corridor outside. Next second, Cornelius Fudge and Snape had entered the ward.
Harry, what's this?" said Fudge, looking agitated. "You should be in bed. Has he had any chocolate?"
he asked Madame Pomfrey anxiously.
"Minister, listen," Harry said. "Sirius Black's innocent. Peter Pettigrew faked his own death. We saw him tonight. You can't let the Dementors do that thing to Sirius. He's..."
But Fudge was shaking his head with a small smile on his face.
Harry, you're very confused. You've been through a dreadful ordeal. Lie back down now. We've got everything under control."
"You haven't," Harry yelled. "You've got the wrong man. Minister, listen, please,"
Hermione said. She had hurried to Harry's side and was gazing imploringly into Fudge's face.
"I saw him too. It was Ron's rat. He's an animagus. Pettigrew, I mean, and..."
"You see, Minister," said Snape, "confounded both of them. Black's done a very good job on them."
"We're not confounded," Harry roared.
"Minister, Professor,"
said Madame Pomfrey angrily.
"I must insist that you leave. Potter is my patient, and he should not be distressed."
"I'm not distressed. I'm trying to tell them what happened," Harry said furiously. "If they'd just listen."
But Madame Pomfrey suddenly stuffed a large chunk of chocolate into Harry's mouth. He choked, and she seized the opportunity to force him back onto the bed.
"Now, please, Minister, these children need care. Please leave."
The door opened again. It was Dumbledore. Harry swallowed his mouthful of chocolate with great difficulty and got up again.
"Professor Dumbledore, Sirius Black..."
"For heaven's sake," said Madame Pomfrey hysterically, "is this a hospital wing or not? Headmaster, I must insist."
"My apologies, Poppy, but I need a word with Mr. Potter and Miss Granger," said Dumbledore calmly.
I have just been talking to Sirius Black.
I suppose he's told you the same fairy tale he's planted in Potter's mind, spat Snape. Something about a rat and Pettigrew being alive.
That indeed is Black's story, said Dumbledore, surveying Snape closely through his half-moon spectacles.
And does my evidence count for nothing? Snarled Snape. Peter Pettigrew was not in the Shrieking Shack, nor did I see any sign of him on the grounds.
That was because you were knocked out, Professor, said Hermione earnestly. You didn't arrive in time to hear.
Miss Granger, hold your tongue.
Now, Snape, said Fudge, startled. The young lady is disturbed in her mind. We must make allowances.
I would like to speak to Harry and Hermione alone, said Dumbledore abruptly. Cornelius, Severus, Poppy, please leave us.
Headmaster, sputtered Madame Pomfrey. They need treatment. They need rest.
This cannot wait, said Dumbledore. I must insist.
Madame Pomfrey pursed her lips and strode away into her office at the end of the ward, slamming the door behind her. Fudge consulted the large gold pocket watch dangling from his waistcoat.
"The Dementors should have arrived by now," he said. "I'll go and meet them, Dumbledore. I'll see you upstairs."
He crossed to the door and held it open for Snape, but Snape hadn't moved.
"You surely don't believe a word of Black's story?"
Snape whispered, his eyes fixed on Dumbledore's face.
"I wish to speak to Harry and Hermione alone," Dumbledore repeated.
Snape took a step toward Dumbledore.
"Sirius Black showed he was capable of murder at the age of 16," he breathed. "You haven't forgotten that, Headmaster? You haven't forgotten that he once tried to kill me?"
"My memory is as good as it ever was, Severus," said Dumbledore quietly.
Snape turned on his heel and marched through the door Fudge was still holding. It closed behind them, and Dumbledore turned to Harry and Hermione. They both burst into speech at the same time.
"Professor, Black's telling the truth. We saw Pettigrew. He escaped when Professor Lupin turned into a werewolf. He's a rat. Pettigrew's front paw, finger, he cut it off. Pettigrew attacked Ron. It wasn't serious."
But Dumbledore held up his hand to stem the flood of explanations.
"It is your turn to listen, and I beg you will not interrupt me because there is very little time," he said quietly. "There is not a shred of proof to support Black's story, except your word, and the word of 2 13-year-old wizards will not convince anybody. A street full of eyewitnesses swore they saw Sirius murder Pettigrew. I myself gave evidence to the Ministry that Sirius had been the Potter's secret keeper."
"Professor Lupin can tell you," Harry said, unable to stop himself.
"Professor Lupin is currently deep in the forest, unable to tell anyone anything. By the time he is human again, it will be too late. Sirius will be worse than dead. I might add that werewolves are so mistrusted by most of our kind that his support will count for very little. And the fact that he and Sirius are old friends...
But listen to me, Harry. It is too late. You understand me? You must see that Professor Snape's version of events is far more convincing than yours."
"He hates Sirius," Hermione said desperately, "all because of some stupid trick Sirius played on him."
"Sirius has not acted like an innocent man. The attack on the fat lady, entering Gryffindor Tower with a knife. Without Pettigrew, alive or dead, we have no chance of overturning Sirius's sentence."
"But you believe us?"
"Yes, I do," said Dumbledore quietly. "But I have no power to make other men see the truth, or to overrule the Minister of Magic."
Harry stared up into the grave face and felt as though the ground beneath him were falling sharply away. He had grown used to the idea that Dumbledore could solve anything. He had expected Dumbledore to pull some amazing solution out of the air, but no, their last hope was gone.
"What we need," said Dumbledore slowly, and his light blue eyes moved from Harry to Hermione, "is more time."
"But," Hermione began, and then her eyes became very round. Oh!
Now, pay attention,
said Dumbledore, speaking very low and very clearly. Sirius is locked in Professor Flitwick's office on the 7th floor, 13th window from the right of the West Tower. If all goes well, you will be able to save more than one innocent life tonight. But remember this, both of you, you must not be seen. Miss Granger, you know the law, you know what is at stake. You must not be seen.
Harry didn't have a clue what was going on. Dumbledore had turned on his heel and looked back as he reached the door.
I'm going to lock you in. It is, he consulted his watch, 5 minutes to midnight. Miss Granger, 3 turns should do it. Good luck.
Good luck, Harry repeated as the door closed behind Dumbledore. 3 turns? What's he talking about? What are we supposed to do?
But Hermione was fumbling with the neck of her robes, pulling from beneath them a very long, very fine gold chain.
Harry, come here, she said urgently. Quick!
Harry moved toward her, completely bewildered. She was holding the chain out. He saw a tiny, sparkling hourglass hanging from it.
Here!
She had thrown the chain around his neck, too.
Ready?
She said, breathlessly.
What are we doing?
Harry said, completely lost. Hermione turned the hourglass over 3 times. The dark ward dissolved. Harry had the sensation that he was flying very fast, backward. A blur of colours and shapes rushed past him. His ears were pounding. He tried to yell but couldn't hear his own voice. And then he felt solid ground beneath his feet, and everything came into focus again. He was standing next to Hermione in the deserted entrance hall, and a stream of golden sunlight was falling across the paved floor from the open front doors. He looked wildly around at Hermione, the chain of the hourglass cutting into his neck.
Hermione, what? In here!
Hermione seized Harry's arm and dragged him across the hall to the door of a broom closet. She opened it, pushed him inside among the buckets and mops, then slammed the door behind them.
What? How? Hermione, what happened?
We've gone back in time,
Hermione whispered, lifting the chain off Harry's neck in the darkness.
3 hours back.
Harry found his own leg and gave it a very hard pinch. It hurt a lot, which seemed to rule out the possibility that he was having a very bizarre dream.
But, shh, listen. Someone's coming. I think it might be us.
Hermione had her ear pressed against the cupboard door.
Footsteps across the hall. Yes, I think it's us going down to Hagrid's.
Are you telling me, Harry whispered, that we're here in this cupboard and we're out there too?
Yes,
said Hermione, her ear still glued to the cupboard door.
I'm sure it's us. It doesn't sound like more than 3 people, and we're walking slowly because we're under the invisibility cloak.
She broke off, still listening intently.
We've gone down the front steps.
Hermione sat down on an upturned bucket, looking desperately anxious, but Harry wanted a few questions answered.
Where did you get that hourglass thing?
It's called a time-turner, Hermione whispered, and I got it from Professor McGonagall on our first day back. I'd been using it all year to get to all my lessons. Professor McGonagall made me swear I wouldn't tell anyone. She had to write all sorts of letters to the Ministry of Magic so I could have one. She had to tell them that I was a model student, that I'd never, ever use it for anything except my studies. I've been turning it back so I could do hours over again. That's how I've been doing several lessons at once, see? But, Harry, I don't understand what Dumbledore wants us to do. Why did he tell us to go back 3 hours? How's that going to help Sirius?
Harry stared at her shadowy face.
There must be something that happened around now. He wants us to change, he said slowly. What happened? We were walking down to Hagrid's 3 hours ago. This is 3 hours ago, and we are walking down to Hagrid's, said Hermione. We just heard ourselves leaving.
Harry frowned. He felt as though he were screwing up his whole brain in concentration.
Dumbledore just said we could save more than one innocent life.
And then it hit him. Hermione, we're going to save Buckbeak.
But how will that help Sirius?
Dumbledore said.
He just told us where the window is, the window of Flitwick's office, where they've got Sirius locked up. We've got to fly Buckbeak up to the window and rescue Sirius. Sirius can escape on Buckbeak. They can escape together.
From what Harry could see of Hermione's face, she looked terrified.
If we manage that without being seen, it'll be a miracle.
Well, we've got to try, haven't we?
Said Harry. He stood up and pressed his ear against the door.
Doesn't sound like anyone's there. Come on, let's go.
Harry pushed open the closet door. The entrance hall was deserted. As quietly and quickly as they could, they darted out of the closet and down the stone steps. The shadows were already lengthening, the tops of the trees in the Forbidden Forest gilded once more with gold.
If anyone's looking out of the window,
Hermione squeaked, looking up at the castle behind them.
We'll run for it,
said Harry determinedly, straight into the forest, all right? We'll have to hide behind a tree or something and keep a lookout.
Okay, but we'll go around by the greenhouses,
said Hermione breathlessly.
We need to keep out of sight of Hagrid's front door, or we'll see us. We must be nearly at Hagrid's by now.
Still working out what she meant, Harry set off at a sprint, Hermione behind him. They tore across the vegetable gardens to the greenhouses, paused for a moment behind them, then set off again, fast as they could, skirting around the Whomping Willow, tearing toward the shelter of the forest. Safe in the shadows of the trees, Harry turned around. Seconds later, Hermione arrived beside him, panting.
Right, she gasped. We need to sneak over to Hagrid's. Keep out of sight, Harry.
They made their way silently through the trees, keeping to the very edge of the forest. Then, as they glimpsed the front of Hagrid's house, they heard a knock upon his door. They moved quickly behind a wide oak trunk and peered out from either side. Hagrid had appeared in his doorway, shaking and white, looking around to see who had knocked, and Harry heard his own voice.
"It's us! We're wearing the invisibility cloak. Let us in, and we can take it off."
"You shouldn't have come,"
Hagrid whispered. He stood back, then shut the door quickly.
"This is the weirdest thing we've ever done," Harry said fervently. "Let's move along a bit," Hermione whispered. "We need to get nearer to Buckbeak."
They crept through the trees until they saw the nervous hippogriff tethered to the fence around Hagrid's pumpkin patch.
"Now?" Harry whispered. "No!" said Hermione. If we steal him now, those committee people will think Hagrid set him free. We've got to wait until they've seen he's tied outside.
That's going to give us about 60 seconds, said Harry.
This was starting to seem impossible. At that moment, there was a crash of breaking china from inside Hagrid's cabin.
That's Hagrid breaking the milk jug, Hermione whispered. I'm going to find Scabbers in a moment.
Sure enough, a few minutes later they heard Hermione's shriek of surprise.
Hermione, said Harry suddenly, what if we just run in there and grab Pettigrew? No, said Hermione in a terrified whisper. Don't you understand? We're breaking one of the most important wizarding laws. Nobody's supposed to change time. Nobody. You heard Dumbledore. If we're seen,
we'd only be seen by ourselves and Hagrid.
Harry, what do you think you'd do if you saw yourself bursting into Hagrid's house?
Said Hermione.
I'd think I'd gone mad, said Harry. Or I'd think there was some dark magic going on.
Exactly. You wouldn't understand. You might even attack yourself. Don't you see? Professor McGonagall told me what awful things have happened when wizards have meddled with time. Loads of them ended up killing their past or future selves by mistake.
Okay, said Harry. It was just an idea. I just thought...
But Hermione nudged him and pointed toward the castle. Harry moved his head a few inches to get a clear view of the distant front doors. Dumbledore, Fudge, the old committee member, and McNair, the executioner, were coming down the steps.
We're about to come out, Hermione breathed.
And, sure enough, moments later, Hagrid's back door opened, and Harry saw himself, Ron, and Hermione walking out of it with Hagrid. It was, without a doubt, the strangest sensation of his life, standing behind the tree and watching himself in the pumpkin patch.
It's okay, Beaky, it's okay,
Hagrid said to Buckbeak. Then he turned to Harry, Ron, and Hermione.
Go on, get going.
Hagrid, we can't. We'll tell them what really happened. They can't kill him.
Go! It's bad enough without you lot in trouble and all.
Harry watched the Hermione in the pumpkin patch throw the invisibility cloak over him and Ron.
Go, quick! Don't listen.
There was a knock on Hagrid's front door. The execution party had arrived. Hagrid turned around and headed back into his cabin, leaving the back door ajar. Harry watched the grass flatten in patches all around the cabin and heard three pairs of feet retreating. He, Ron, and Hermione had gone. But the Harry and Hermione hidden in the trees could now hear what was happening inside the cabin through the back door.
"Where is the beast?"
came the cold voice of McNair.
"Outside,"
Hagrid croaked. Harry pulled his head out of sight as McNair's face appeared at Hagrid's window, staring out at Buckbeak. Then they heard Fudge.
"We have to read you the official notice of execution, Hagrid. I'll make it quick, and then you and McNair need to sign it. McNair, you're supposed to listen, too. That's procedure."
McNair's face vanished from the window. It was now or never.
"Wait here," Harry whispered to Hermione. "I'll do it."
As Fudge's voice started again, Harry darted out from behind his tree, vaulted the fence into the pumpkin patch, and approached Buckbeak.
"It is the decision of the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures that the Hippogriff Buckbeak, hereafter called the Condemned, shall be executed on the 6th of June at sundown."
Careful not to blink, Harry stared up into Buckbeak's fierce orange eyes once more and bowed. Buckbeak sank to his scaly knees and then stood up again. Harry began to fumble with the knot of rope tying Buckbeak to the fence.
"Sentenced to execution by beheading, to be carried out by the committee's appointed executioner, Walden McNair."
"Come on, Buckbeak," Harry murmured. "Come on. We're going to help you. Quietly, quietly."
"As witnessed below. Hagrid, you sign here."
Harry threw all his weight onto the rope, but Buckbeak had dug in his front feet.
"Well, let's get this over with,"
said the reedy voice of the committee member from inside Hagrid's cabin.
"Hagrid, perhaps it will be better if you stay inside."
"No, I want to be with him. I don't want him to be alone."
Footsteps echoed from within the cabin.
"Buckbeak, move,"
Harry hissed. Harry tugged harder on the rope around Buckbeak's neck. The hippogriff began to walk, rustling its wings irritably. They were still 10 feet away from the forest, in plain view of Hagrid's back door.
"One moment, please, McNair," came Dumbledore's voice. "You need to sign, too."
The footsteps stopped. Harry heaved on the rope. Buckbeak snapped his beak and walked a little faster. Hermione's white face was sticking out from behind a tree.
"Harry, hurry," she mouthed.
Harry could still hear Dumbledore's voice talking from within the cabin. He gave the rope another wrench. Buckbeak broke into a grudging trot. They had reached the trees.
"Quick, quick,"
Hermione moaned, darting out from behind her tree, seizing the rope too and adding her weight to make Buckbeak move faster. Harry looked over his shoulder. They were now blocked from sight. They couldn't see Hagrid's garden at all.
"Stop,"
he whispered to Hermione.
"They might hear us."
Hagrid's back door had opened with a bang. Harry, Hermione, and Buckbeak stood quite still. Even the hippogriff seemed to be listening intently. Silence. Then,
"Where is it?"
said the reedy voice of the committee member.
"Where is the beast?"
"It was tied here," said the executioner furiously. "I saw it, just here."
"How extraordinary," said Dumbledore. There was a note of amusement in his voice.
"Beaky,"
said Hagrid huskily. There was a swishing noise and the thud of an axe. The executioner seemed to have swung it into the fence in anger. And then came the howling, and this time they could hear Hagrid's words through the sobs.
"Gone! Gone! Bless his little beak! He's gone! Must have pulled himself free! Beaky, you clever boy!"
Buckbeak started to strain against the rope, trying to get back to Hagrid. Harry and Hermione tightened their grip and dug their heels into the forest floor to stop him.
"Someone untied him," the executioner was snarling. "We should search the grounds, the forest."
"McNair, if Buckbeak has indeed been stolen, do you really think the thief will have led him away on foot?" said Dumbledore, still sounding amused. "Search the skies, if you will. Hagrid, I could do with a cup of tea, or a large brandy."
"Oh, of course, Professor," said Hagrid, who sounded weak with happiness. "Come in, come in."
Harry and Hermione listened closely. They heard footsteps, the soft cursing of the executioner, the snap of the door, and then silence once more.
"Now what?" whispered Harry, looking around. "We'll have to hide in here," said Hermione, who looked very shaken. "We need to wait until they've gone back to the castle. Then we wait until it's safe to fly Buckbeak up to Sirius's window. He won't be there for another couple of hours. Ooh, this is going to be difficult."
She looked nervously over her shoulder into the depths of the forest. The sun was setting now.
"We're going to have to move," said Harry, thinking hard. "We've got to be able to see the Whomping Willow, or we won't know what's going on."
"Okay," said Hermione, getting a firmer grip on Buckbeak's rope. "But we've got to keep out of sight, Harry, remember."
They moved around the edge of the forest, darkness falling thickly around them, until they were hidden behind a clump of trees through which they could make out the willow.
"There's Ron," said Harry suddenly.
A dark figure was sprinting across the lawn, and its shout echoed through the still night air.
"Get away from him! Get away! Scabbers, come here!"
And then they saw two more figures materialize out of nowhere. Harry watched himself and Hermione chasing after Ron. Then he saw Ron dive.
"Gotcha! Get off, you stinking cat!" "There's Sirius," said Harry.
The great shape of the dog had bounded out from the roots of the willow. They saw him bowl Harry over, then seize Ron.
"Looks even worse from here, doesn't it?" said Harry, watching the dog pulling Ron into the roots. "Ouch! Look! I just got walloped by the tree, and so did you. This is weird."
The Whomping Willow was creaking and lashing out with its lower branches. They could see themselves darting here and there, trying to reach the trunk, and then the tree froze.
"That was Crookshanks pressing the knot," said Hermione.
"And there we go," Harry muttered. "We're in."
The moment they disappeared, the tree began to move again. Seconds later, they heard footsteps quite close by. Dumbledore, McNair, Fudge, and the old committee member were making their way up to the castle.
"Right after we'd gone down into the passage," said Hermione. "If only Dumbledore had come with us."
"McNair and Fudge would have come too," said Harry bitterly. "I bet you anything Fudge would have told McNair to murder Sirius on the spot."
They watched the four men climb the castle steps and disappear from view. For a few minutes the scene was deserted, then...
"Here comes Lupin," said Harry, as they saw another figure sprinting down the stone steps and hurrying toward the willow.
Harry looked up at the sky. Clouds were obscuring the moon completely. They watched Lupin seize a broken branch from the ground and prod the knot on the trunk. The tree stopped fighting, and Lupin, too, disappeared into the gap in its roots.
"If only he'd grabbed the cloak," said Harry. "It's just lying there."
He turned to Hermione.
"If I dashed out now and grabbed it, Snape would never be able to get it. And, Harry, we mustn't be seen." "How can you stand this?" he asked Hermione fiercely. "Just standing here and watching it happen."
He hesitated.
"I'm going to grab the cloak. Harry, no!"
Hermione seized the back of Harry's robes not a moment too soon. Just then, they heard a burst of song. It was Hagrid making his way up to the castle, singing at the top of his voice and weaving slightly as he walked. A large bottle was swinging from his hands.
"See?" Hermione whispered. "See what would have happened? We've got to keep out of sight. No, Buckbeak!"
The Hippogriff was making frantic attempts to get to Hagrid again. Harry seized his rope, too, straining to hold Buckbeak back. They watched Hagrid meander tipsily up to the castle. He was gone. Buckbeak stopped fighting to get away. His head drooped sadly. Barely 2 minutes later, the castle doors flew open yet again, and Snape came charging out of them, running toward the willow. Harry's fists clenched as they watched Snape skid to a halt next to the tree, looking around. He grabbed the cloak and held it up.
"Get your filthy hands off it,"
Harry snarled under his breath.
"Shh."
Snape seized the branch Lupin had used to freeze the tree, prodded the knot, and vanished from view as he put on the cloak.
"So that's it," said Hermione quietly. "We're all down there. And now we've just got to wait."